Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn about the Minneapolis VA's smoking cessation program and lung cancer screening, and we'll also check out the Soldier for Life program. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Our soldiers and airmen of Hispanic and Latino descent contribute daily to the success of our mission. Their unique cultural experiences add value and diversity to our organization and our communities. These values have inspired the Minnesota National Guard to get involved in local Hispanic and Latino community events throughout the year and around the state. We have begun a new Minnesota National Guard initiative, the Hispanic and Latino American Special Emphasis Council. The Minnesota National Guard continuously seeks the enlistment of soldiers and airmen that reflect the communities in which we serve. Through continued interaction and immersion in the communities we represent, the Minnesota National Guard will continue to diversify its force and truly represent Minnesota. The mission of the Hispanic and Latino American Special Emphasis Council is to maximize the productive capacity represented in members of the Minnesota National Guard. Come support the community of West St. Paul as they celebrate Cinco de Mayo on May 7th. Our own Hispanic and Latino American Special Emphasis Council will have a booth set up to connect with and help educate families about the National Guard. The council has a prime location for their booth, so bring your family by and say hello and learn more about the Minnesota National Guard in your community.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center is Dr. Stephen Fu. Dr. Fu is the director of the Center for Chronic Disease Outcomes Research at VA Health Services Research Center on Innovation and associate professor of medicine at the University of Minnesota. He is a general internal medicine physician and health services researcher. Dr. Fu is an international leader in the delivery of evidence-based tobacco cessation treatments among priority populations, including racial and ethnic minorities and veterans. Dr. Fu, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure to be here today.
Doctor, pretty important topics we're going to talk about today, smoking cessation and lung cancer screening. But before we do that, I've been taking a look at your resume, and you spent a lot of time going to school.
Yes, I did. Not sure what it would even add up to if I were to try and count it, but it was many years.
And you completed your undergraduate work at the University of Pennsylvania. Earned your MD degree in 1996 at Jefferson Medical College, and then completed a residency at internal medicine at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia. And you had a little more after that, didn't you?
Yes, I completed a fellowship at the University of Pennsylvania, which is also in Philadelphia.
When you started, when did you first think that you would focus on smoking cessation and lung cancer treatment, those type of issues?
I decided that during my fellowship. It was a primary care research fellowship, and it was during that time I blended my clinical interests in helping people with wanting to tackle what is really the number one public health problem in the United States and the world, which is tobacco use.
So you've been at this topic for quite a while, sir.
Yes, sir.
And when did you move to Minneapolis?
I moved to Minneapolis here in 2001, the fall of 2001, to become a physician and to do research related to tobacco cessation, both at the VA and the University of Minnesota.
Well, there's a lot of joint work going on between the University of Minnesota and the VA. A lot of the doctors come in and they work at both places. It's pretty common, isn't it?
That's very common. The VA is a very strong academic affiliate of the university. And while we may do primarily our clinical practice at the VA, our academic affiliation or home is the university.
The doctor, in this particular topic, which is smoking, do veterans have a higher experience of smoking than the rest of the population?
Yes, the military veterans do have a higher experience with smoking. In fact, data would suggest that nearly 70% of veterans have smoked cigarettes in their lifetime. Fortunately, though, that the prevalence of smoking among veterans has dramatically declined. And currently, it's about 20% among veterans. However, there are certain populations or groups within the veteran population that smoke at higher rates. For example, smoking among veterans who are returning from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, we've observed rates as high as 30 or 40%. Also, women veterans have high rates of smoking that are equivalent to men. In the general population, women smoke less than men do. But with women veterans, it's the same rate as male veterans.
Now, Doctor, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and as I recall from 40-some years ago, the incidence of smoking was quite a bit higher than those rates you just talked about. And as I recall, back then, the women didn't smoke nearly as much as the men.
That back then, that was the case. But while overall rates have declined dramatically, rates among women veterans have risen.
So things have changed in the last four decades.
Yes.
Has anything changed dramatically in the 20 or so years that you've been studying smoking?
In terms of treatment, yes. There are a lot more treatments that are available to help veterans and people who smoke cigarettes to quit smoking. And so that has been a dramatic improvement over the past 20 years. Also, there's been a number of developments or improvements in laws and policies regarding smoke-free homes or not being able to smoke in the workplace. So this whole environment, the culture that we live in, people smoke less.
That's good to hear, Doctor. We're speaking to Dr. Stephen Fu from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio. Doctor, is the incidence or the rate of smoking level across the United States throughout the VA? Do you have any numbers on that?
The prevalence of smoking continues to decline overall, and a lot of that has to do with youth prevention efforts. So youth, fortunately, are not picking up smoking at a high rate as they once were. But what has, which unfortunately stabilized, is the number of people who are quitting smoking. That consistently is not increasing. The rate of quitting is stable.
So overall, as a percentage of the population smoking, whether it's veterans or the rest of the population, it's a much smaller percentage these days than it was years ago.
That is correct.
Now, is it safe to assume, I know a lot of my Vietnam buddies just won't give it up, and they're still out there doing it. Is there pretty high incidence in that group, do you know?
It's continuing to decline. It would be about 20% would be the rate or prevalence of smoking in that population.
Now, Doctor, one of the things we want to talk about today was lung cancer screening. Can you tell me within the VA healthcare system, who's eligible for lung cancer screening and who should ask their doctor about it?
Sure. Thank you for asking that question. I know we'll be talking more in detail, but what I'll briefly say is that lung cancer screening is directed at people who are considered to be high-risk smokers. And so that would be an individual who's 55 to 80 years of age, has a history of smoking 30 pack years, or on average a pack per day for 30 years, is currently smoking, or someone with a history of 30 pack years and has quit smoking within the past 15 years. If someone has quit smoking for more than 15 years, they actually would not benefit from lung cancer screening because the risks of getting lung cancer is almost the same as someone in the general population who has never smoked cigarettes.
So we say lung cancer screening. What actually does that mean? What type of a test is that?
So what we do is we screen them using a low-dose CT scan, or some might call it a CAT scan, and it's a pretty non-invasive procedure. And it's done at the Minneapolis VA and also done in other healthcare settings.
So if for your patients, and I believe the Minneapolis VA healthcare system has about 100,000 patients of the 370,000 veterans we have here, if they meet that criteria, if they smoked a pack a day for 30 years or had done that and quit within the last 15 years, you would recommend that they have a conversation with their doctor at the VA about and ask him, should I get screened for that?
Yes, I would recommend a conversation with their doctor at the VA to see whether or not screening is right for them or not right for them. There are pros to screening and there are some cons to screening, and so they should have a thorough discussion with their doctor at the VA.
So another good thing to bring up with your doctor, write it down, put it on your list, especially if you've, I know a lot of my VA or a lot of my Vietnam veteran buddies have smoked more than a pack a day for 30 years, so they should certainly get in there. Doctor, we have to take a short break. When I come back, I want to talk about smoking cessation and the tricks and the things you've learned about helping our veterans and the rest of us in the population to quit smoking. We're speaking with Dr. Stephen Fu from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking today about smoking cessation and lung cancer screening with Dr. Stephen Fu Dr. Fu is an international leader in the delivery of evidence-based tobacco cessation treatments among priority populations, including racial, ethnic minorities, and veterans. And Doctor, as we talked about in that first segment, you spent a lot of your life going to school and training yourself to be an expert in this field. And as an ex-smoker, I know a lot of my buddies from the Vietnam era and former and other wars smoked, and just part of what we did in those days. And fortunately, I was able to quit a long time ago, but a lot of my buddies aren't. And what would you say to the like, let's take my generation, Vietnam veterans that have smoked most of their life? They know they shouldn't, but they just have a tough time quitting. Do you have the ability to help them?
Yes, we do, Tom. And while quitting is very hard, and I think that's the thing to recognize and acknowledge, that quitting is hard, but quitting is also a process. And it often takes multiple quit attempts, 3, 5, 7, 9, even 9 attempts or more to quit before one is able to quit for good. And what I would say is that every time one makes a quit attempt, one is learning something about how to quit successfully for good. And you asked me earlier, what have been the developments over the past 20 years? Well, those developments are, is we now have evidence-based treatments, or treatments that we know can increase or double the odds or triple the odds that one is likely to be successful in quitting smoking.
So why is it so hard to quit? It's really an addiction, isn't it?
Yes, Nick, it is very hard to quit because of nicotine, which is the main chemical in cigarettes that is a very addicting substance.
Well, doctor, I remember when I only smoked for about 10 years, and I remember every time I'd try to quit, I'd make it a couple of days, and then the next thing you know, in a weak moment, I had a cigarette, and then I said, the heck with it. And even once during those times, I quit for a year when I went to college, and then one night I had a cigarette, and I was right back on it. And then I found a good reason to quit. But I think what you're telling me is make your attempt to quit. If you fail, don't be so disappointed that you just go back to full-time smoking. Try again.
Absolutely. Just try again to quit smoking. And then talk to your doctor, or even look on the internet and access the numerous resources that are available to help you quit smoking. For example, there are both medications and behavioral supports to help someone like you or your friends to quit smoking. Medications such as nicotine replacement, and there's two other prescription medications that you can talk to your doctor about. And there's also, for veterans, a national quit line that I'm just going to share the number here, that any veteran can call in the United States and get help to quit smoking and get a personalized quit plan. And that number is 1-855-QUIT-VET, 1-855-QUIT-VET. And the Department of Defense also has a website that is available for military service members. And that website is called youcanquit2.org, youcanquit2.org. And it's available to help military members quit smoking.
Now, here at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, are there... Do you put on like classes or anything where they can come in and they can learn about, I suppose, the damage that smoking can do and what it's doing to your body, and here's some tips on how to quit, those type of things?
Yeah, we have a number of resources that are available at the Minneapolis VA. And what our smoking cessation program offers is both medications and behavioral support. And we encourage our veterans to get both medications and behavioral support because we know that the combination of the two is most effective to help people quit smoking. Medications alone is effective, behavioral support alone is effective, but when you combine them, it's even more effective. And those can be accessed by talking to your primary care health team. We offer all the medications that are approved by the FDA to help people quit smoking. The FDA stands for the Food and Drug Administration. And we offer also behavioral supports both in person. You can take a group class, or you can even get individual support. And then we also provide and encourage veterans to call that national quit line, 1-855-QUIT-VET.
Doctor, you said there's a number of things, medications. Does this, I understand there's some nicotine gum, something like that. Does that help?
Yes. So in terms of the medications, there are three classes of medications to help people quit smoking. The main class is nicotine replacement therapy. And that comes in five forms: nicotine patch, nicotine gum, nicotine lozenge, the nicotine nasal inhaler, and then what's called the Nicotrol oral inhaler. And what's available over the counter is the nicotine patch, the gum, and the lozenge. But that's also available by prescription from the VA. And if you have VA benefits, that's going to be at a subsidized cost or even for free, depending upon the level of your service connection status.
So those ease the withdrawal pains from being off the nicotine from the cigarettes?
Correct. The nicotine replacement is designed to help smokers alleviate their cravings and withdrawals so that they could focus on the quitting process.
And slowly step down from the nicotine addiction.
Correct. Usually, for example, a standard course of the nicotine patch starts off at, for example, 21 milligrams for a month, followed by 14 milligrams for 2 weeks, and then 7 milligrams for 2 weeks, and then stop. And though sometimes we can extend that treatment for people who have really significant cravings and need longer treatments.
So your best advice today is the next time you have an appointment with your VA doctor, bring it up. Say, doctor, I need help quitting, and maybe I need a lung screening, and what can you do to help me? And let's just give it a try and see if it works.
That's correct.
So once again, the other things they can do is call 1-855-QUIT-VET, or you can go to the website youcanquit2.org. We're speaking with Dr. Stephen Fu from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System and Minnesota Military Radio. Doctor, I want to come back once again to lung cancer screening. I'm sure that if I could talk to my old Vietnam buddy friends, I'd say you smoke too long, go out and get a screening, find out whether or not there's any damage, and ask the doctor if they can help you cut back on that smoking and quit. Who, again, is eligible for a lung cancer screening?
So it's a high-risk smoker. So that's someone who's age 55 to 80 years of age, has a 30-pack year history, or an average of having smoked one pack per day for 30 years and is currently smoking, or someone with a 30-pack year history who has quit smoking within the past 15 years. They are eligible for being screened for lung cancer. And the benefits for being screened is that it can potentially save lives. When we looked at the National Lung Cancer Screening Trial, that showed that there was a 20% reduction in lung cancer mortality and a 7% reduction in all-cause mortality. So you should talk to your doctors about whether screening is right for you, but also realize there may be some potential harms associated with screening. So you want to make sure that it really is right for you and don't just assume that I must get screening. But that's what a conversation with your doctor will help you and your doctor figure out.
And if there is a problem, the earlier you catch it, the better chance you have to cure it.
Correct. At the Minneapolis VA, when the screening test is done, there's a lung cancer screening coordinator. They work with the radiologist and the healthcare team to ensure that you get the care that you're going to need.
Doctor, we've got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our veterans who might still be smoking out there?
My final thought would be just to encourage you to consider quitting and realize that we're there to help you. We have an array of services that have been shown to help people quit smoking. So just come on in, give us a call, or call 1-855-QUIT-VET.
And if you're already a patient in the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, call in, get an appointment with your doctor and say, I'd like to talk to you about getting some help to quit and maybe talk about lung cancer screening, see if that's appropriate for me. But the VA is there and you're ready to help, give us a call. Let's get in there. Right, doctor?
Absolutely. We're here.
Doctor, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
That's Dr. Stephen Fu from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System talking about smoking cessation programs and lung cancer screening in Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jim Kellogg, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. This coming June, over 800 high schoolers will travel to Minnesota Boys State and Minnesota Girls State. They are premier programs in Minnesota for hands-on learning about grassroots democracy. The students will create their own parties, elect their own legislature, and state officers to become better citizens of our great nation. Please join the American Legion family still serving America. Contact us at mnlegion.org. That's mnlegion.org.
Joining me now is Lieutenant Colonel John Swords, who is assigned to the Office of the Chief of Staff of the Army on the Soldier for Life program. Colonel, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
Colonel, can you tell us a little bit about your career? How long have you been in the military?
Sure. 22 years of service. I'm a field artilleryman by trade. I've had a broad variety of assignments over the years. Most recently, before I got to this assignment, I was a battalion commander out at Fort Bliss, Texas, in 3rd Brigade, 1st Armored Division. I commanded a brigade special troops battalion.
Colonel, looks like you've been to a lot of places, and at one time you were at the barracks in Hawaii.
Schofield Barracks.
Schofield Barracks, Hawaii. How was that assignment, sir?
Stationed at Schofield Barracks for 4 years is fantastic. It's easy to live in Hawaii. It's paradise.
Did you pick up a little bit of history of World War II while you were there?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of great experience. Probably one of my favorite experiences. I was commanding a firing battery, and I got to do a salute for the 100th 442, which is one of the most decorated World War II units in World War II. Is all made up of all Japanese Americans. More Medal of Honor winners came out of that battalion than any other battalion in the Army. And so they had all these gentlemen, all these Medal of Honor winners present. I believe it was the 50th anniversary, but I got to do a salute, fire salute in honor of those gentlemen. It was really neat.
That'd be a great day, sir. I understand you were deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom.
At the time, I was assigned to 2nd of the 8th Field Artillery, 1st Brigade, 25th Infantry Division up in Fort Wainwright, Alaska. I was a field grade officer in the battalion, so I was the XO and then the S3.
You've gotten to see a lot of things in your first 22 years, sir.
I have.
And now you're assigned to the Office of the Chief of Staff of the Army.
Yes, sir.
And you're in charge of the Soldier for Life program?
I am not in charge of the program. I work for a guy named Colonel Adam Rock, who is the director. I am the Central Region Director, so I have a responsibility for conducting strategic outreach to the Midwest.
And can you tell us, what is the Soldier for Life program?
Let me set the stage for that. So the program's been around 3.5 years. And the reason it came about was because if you go back about 5 years ago, I had a lot of problems in the military. We weren't transitioning soldiers very well back into civilian life. We had, we'd been an Army at War for a number of years, escalating divorce rates, suicide rates. We weren't doing very well in terms of how well we were taking care of our wounded warriors, both in the Army and then in the VA system as well. And so kind of with all that as the backdrop, our chief of staff at the Army at the time was also, on the other hand, encountering a lot of goodwill that existed across the country. He was coming in contact with organization after organization that had resources and wanted to help. And he realized he needed to establish an office that could go out and interact with all that goodwill, bring those resources to bear on veterans, soldiers, and their families. And so, simply put, we do outreach, and what we want to talk about employment opportunities, health and wellness opportunities, education opportunities, and we want to bring all those resources to bear, again, on our veterans, soldiers, and family members.
So, sir, is that while they're still in the military, or is that while they're transitioning out?
I mean, it's primarily transitioning out is where we bring a lot of it to bear. But, we also want to service family members, and we want to service our veterans. So we're willing to go out and figure out who's doing what and have that conversation, and then, make suggestions and make connections to get those resources pointed in the right direction.
So, Colonel, are there some specific goals or objectives that you were working on?
There's a broad swath of goals and objectives. I mean, our primary mission, the key word in our mission is to connect. There are somewhere between 42,000 and 46,000 organizations across this country that want to help veterans. And if you let that, if you think about that, 42,000 to 46,000, that's a daunting number to figure out who's doing what. And so we want to figure that out and, to the best of our ability, get those connections made. Primarily, we're looking to connect. I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm here interacting with the Minnesota Yellow Ribbon Program to learn more about it, so that I can take those best practices that I've seen over the last couple of days back to my office and share it with my office mates, and then as I hit the road and travel throughout the Midwest, I will share those same lessons learned and best practices I've seen here in Minnesota. But other objectives, I mean, when we go out and we talk to people, one of the things we're promoting is a mindset that once a soldier, always a soldier. You're going to be a soldier for life. To explain that a little bit better, we talk about, there's this thing we've put together. It's called the Soldier Family Life Cycle. There's four phases that soldier family life cycle. You start strong, you serve strong, you reintegrate strong, and you remain strong. And I'll talk about this briefly. So start strong. I mean, it sounds like what it means. The Army recruits the top 29% of the 18 to 24-year-olds that are eligible to serve. And so by that, we get high-quality individuals coming into the military to serve in our Army. And as soon as we get them in, we start imprinting our values and our ethos on them. When you think about the Army as an institution, we recruit people from all walks of life, every race, color, creed, religion, culture, education level. We have to bring them in and very quickly get them assimilated into the Army. One of the ways that we do that is we focus on values. We're a values-based organization. We focus on that. Then you're going to serve strong, and whether you do one enlistment or multiple enlistments or a 30-year career, you're going to get educated along the way. The Army puts heavy emphasis on educating the force. And then we're going to move to phase three, reintegrate strong. And so, and this is where we've really focused heavily over the last couple of years to get better. In 2010, West Point did a study, and it showed that the Army was doing a very poor job at transitioning our service members back into civilian life. We weren't reintegrating them very well. So we put heavy emphasis on getting better at that.
And the fourth area, sir?
Okay, fourth area is remain strong. So, and this is just a recognition by us that we have got to make sure that we reintegrate folks successfully, because when they move back out to civilian society, back into their community, they're going to remain strong. Those things that, those values and that ethos and that discipline, the things that made them a soldier, they're still part of the fabric of who they are. And we recognize when they move back out into their community, that's part of who they are. And they're going to be ambassadors in their community. And what we would prefer as an institution, they had a positive experience while serving, that they reintegrated successfully, and that they go back out in their communities and become our biggest advocates and help us recruit the next generation of all volunteers. We fully recognize that if we don't do right by our soldiers and our force, those same folks could also be our biggest critics and make recruiting that next generation much more difficult. So it's just a recognition on our part that we've got to do this a lot better, and we're moving in that direction.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When I come back, I want to talk a little bit about the reason you're visiting Minnesota. We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel John Swords on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Today's Yellow Ribbon Company Spotlight is Hennepin Technical College. With campuses in Eden Prairie and Brooklyn Park, Hennepin Technical College has over 9,000 students enrolled in 45 programs. The veteran student organization within the college is comprised of students willing to dedicate time and support to veterans, service members, and military families. This group plans veteran recognition and honor events, provides supplies for the Veteran Center, and hosts an annual drive to collect toiletries for patients at the VA hospital. In addition, Hennepin Technical College provides several student and employee volunteers to help local Yellow Ribbon community networks with their local support efforts. Hennepin Technical College has been a Yellow Ribbon company since May of 2012 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families.
Our flag is not one color, though the threads are made of the same fibers. Different colors intertwine to create a bold, vibrant symbol of inspiration for our nation. The Minnesota National Guard is much the same. The Guard finds its strength not only in its diversity, but also in its ability to weave together people of different faiths, cultures, and races with the common threads of patriotism and the love of service. We continually strive to enlist men and women of all backgrounds in our ranks. We must reflect those whom we lead, serve, and protect. The time to appreciate diversity is today.
Hello, this is Stephen Whited, Adjutant of the DAV Minnesota, looking for volunteer drivers to help transport our Minnesota veterans to their appointments at VA medical facilities around the state. The DAV Minnesota has provided vans for this use and work with our county veteran service officers, provides transportations to get our veterans to their medical appointments. We need volunteer drivers all over Minnesota. Please call the DAV Minnesota headquarters to help with this mission. Please call 651-291-1212 or visit davmn.org. Please volunteer today.
We've been speaking with Lieutenant Colonel John Swords from the Office of the Chief of Staff of the Army about the Soldier for Life program. And Colonel, you were telling me that there's four kind of areas when our civilians sign up and become soldiers. They have to start strong. You teach them how to serve strong when they're done with their enlistment or ready to retire. We want them to reintegrate strong and to remain strong. And once a soldier, always a soldier, just like we hear about the Marines. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Yeah, we were not afraid to co-opt that from the Marines, but it's the same. Yeah, we want you to have that mindset.
Same concept. Even us Air Force guys have that, sir. In that transition period, we've got transition advisors here in Minnesota that help some of the people that are getting out of the National Guard, for instance, and they have all kinds of information and resources available about education and getting into jobs and explaining the experience they got in the military in terms that civilian employers can understand and value. Do you get into some of those things, sir?
Certainly. I mean, one of the biggest changes over the last couple of years is how much more emphasis we've put on the Reintegrate Strong and the Soldier for Life TAP process that a soldier has to go through on the way out. So, you know, today, at a minimum, a soldier is going to go through a 5-day TAP class on his way out, his or her way out. In that 5 days, they're going to spend time with the Department of Labor, and they're going to learn about all the different employment opportunities that exist out there. They're going to get coaching on how to write a resume, how to do an interview, et cetera. In that 5-day period, they're going to get 2 days with the VA, and they're going to learn all about their benefits and make sure they begin the application process for that all those benefits. And so that's the minimum. And then soldiers have the ability to opt into some additional 2-day tracks. One example would be if he or she were interested in becoming an entrepreneur, they can go into a 2-day track taught by the Small Business Administration to help them get started, basically get them educated and pointed in the right direction.
And some of that's as basic as writing up a decent resume that an employer would value the experience that they had all the time they were in the military.
Certainly.
It sounds like a simple thing, sir, but we found that's pretty important, because if you were a tanker or an artilleryman in your case, and you come out and you apply to a civilian employer, he's going to say, what do I do with somebody that shot a bunch of...
Certainly. We're putting a lot of emphasis on that. And you know, we're doing that through our TAP process, but we also are encouraging all of our soldiers to visit the, you know, their Department of Labor counterpart in each state. So, you know, for example, the Workforce Commission, go outside the gate, go to the Workforce Commission. They're going to provide a lot of the same services. Like Workforce Commissions, they're tied in with the local business community. And I mean, if you're looking to stay local, they can help you find those local jobs. So the Army is an institution. We're partnered with the Department of Labor, and we're partnered with the VA. We're partnered with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. There's an overabundance of resources out there to help soldiers prepare themselves for transition.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel John Swords from the Office of the Chief of Staff of the Army about the Soldier for Life program on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Colonel, one of the things that you're tasked with is to try to sort through all of those resources that are available, all those thousands of organizations out there, and probably try to find the ones that can be most helpful. And part of that is what brought you to Minnesota today.
Yes, certainly. We were contacted by Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program about 6 months ago, said we'd like you to come out and talk to one of our Yellow Ribbon company seminars. So I put that on the calendar about 6 months ago and have been very excited to come out and see it. I wanted to learn about, you know, how the state of Minnesota has approached this. The vantage, I'm in a job where I get to travel around and I get to see a lot of different approaches to this, how different communities are tackling veterans issues, and we're always trading notes and comparing how different communities approach this, so that we can we can help where we can, but we also want to be able to share best practices and make connections so that everybody gets better at this.
So, sir, you were able to attend the Yellow Ribbon Company seminar that was held at Cargill here in Minneapolis, and I'll bet there were dozens of Yellow Ribbon companies there this morning.
I believe there were 49 companies there, and it was a great event. It's very humbling to see the commitment level of these companies to take care of veterans. And then, you know, the primary thing they're doing while they're there is it gives them an opportunity to network and share best practices and trade notes on things that they're doing to get better. And so that was a great event.
And a lot of those companies here in Minnesota have made commitments to hire veterans in quite large numbers over the next decade.
Right.
So that's got to be encouraging for all of the soldiers that might be getting ready to retire and get out.
That's what it's all about.
Well, we want all the good ones to come to Minnesota, sir. So make sure you tell them about what's going on here. What else are you doing in town? Have you been able to meet with some of those Yellow Ribbon companies individually?
Not on this trip. I didn't meet with any of the Yellow Ribbon companies individually. I did. We did stop by and talk to Anytime Fitness, and we made them aware of the Yellow Ribbon program, and I think we're going to get that connection made. Anytime Fitness is doing some great stuff for veterans. We had a chance to tour the VA Health Center in Minneapolis, which was that's a point of pride for the city, I believe, and rightly so. It is a very impressive facility. And then we had a chance to go out to speak with a number of folks in the Minnesota National Guard about different family programs and employment programs that they're working on statewide. So that was a very good conversation, very encouraging.
There's a lot going on here in Minnesota, sir. We tell these stories every week, so
yeah,
I hope
certainly
You're picking up a lot of good information.
I am. It's very encouraging.
Colonel, we got about a minute left. What are the future goals of the Soldier for Life program?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I'll try to keep it quick. But, you know, aside from just traveling and seeing and connecting and sharing best practices, we also have, kind of one foot on the policy side because we reside in D.C. and work in the Pentagon. So we're working to make some policies a little bit easier for soldiers to participate in internships and apprenticeships and on-the-job training programs. So the Army, the Department of Defense authorizes these things now. And so we're just trying to get the policy straight so that more folks can participate in these programs. The idea is that we want them to get trained, certified, or credentialed prior to leaving the service. That way they take the uniform off on Friday, and on Monday they can walk into a job because they've got the credential or certification they need to get hired.
Colonel is a Vietnam veteran who, when I came home from Vietnam, they gave me a ticket and sent me home. Without any other help, I'm very encouraged to hear all the work you're doing to help your soldiers when they do leave the Army and all of the good information you're able to give them on Soldier for Life. Keep up the good work, sir.
Sir, thank you for your time today. This is a great job to have. It's very positive, and I certainly have appreciated my trip to Minnesota. I'm sure I'll be back in the next few months to do some follow-up, but thank you for the time today.
That'd be great. Thanks for joining us today, sir.
Yes, sir.
That was Lieutenant Colonel John Swords from the Office of the Chief of Staff of the Army on the Soldier for Life program on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Sibley County Veteran Service Officer, Lisa Klink. Lisa, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
How are all our veterans in Sibley County today?
I think they're probably really wet and cold. It's not been great weather out there, so... But other than that, I think they're doing pretty good.
As we talk every time you're on the show, for any veteran in any county that wants to come visit the A County Veteran Service Officer, they can go to one in any county they want to. All they have to do is stop in, or it's better if they make an appointment, get a hold of your DD-214, your discharge certificate, and go in and register with your County Veteran Service Officer, because you may not need them today. But you may need them later, and your family may need them later. And that's the message every month, isn't it, Lisa?
Yes, it is. So important to, even if you don't think you need them, it's so important to just get registered, know the face behind the name, and they're there to help you. And sometimes there's things that you don't are unaware of, but they all know it, and they'll be able to help you.
Lisa, earlier in the show today, we had Dr. Stephen Fu on from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, and he was talking about smoking cessation programs and lung cancer screening. And he tells us that the Minneapolis VA healthcare system has all kinds of resources available for any of our veterans that want to quit smoking or have been smoking for many, many, many years and might want to get checked to make sure they're okay.
Yes, and the VAMC has a great program with that. I think that's kind of ties well into breathing and air quality and what we're about to talk about with burn pits. So, yes, they have a great program to help individuals stop smoking, and also an avenue in which they have some great pulmonary people there to evaluate lung capacity in addition to any issues like lung cancer.
And they're ready, willing, and able to help, and they can get you in quickly here in Minnesota. We've got one of the best VA healthcare systems in the country.
Yes, we do.
So, Lisa, today we wanted to talk about what's called burn pits from the recent engagements in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Correct. Recently, what we've been seeing is veterans who, and let me try to explain that the burn pits are basically anywhere from a hole to an acre, a huge facility where they're burning trash. And unfortunately, over there, there's not, in this other country, they don't have a system like we do for picking up trash and processing it the way we do it here in the United States. And so on these installations, we've had burn pits, and those burn pits have burned anything from, a feces to actual, glass, plastic, toxins, any type of, form of, in some instance, then they'll need an accelerator to actually burn this stuff, so then they're putting gas on it as well. So you have all these toxins that are coming up out of the air from these fumes and these burning burn pits, and they're having an impact on air quality and what these soldiers are breathing. So many of these soldiers, are actually either responsible for the burn pits, or they've had to do duty on them, or It's simply they are running around the base, and they're in that location of those burn pits, and they're inhaling this. So these things, you know, initially, you know, no one, like anything, we are uncertain about what these are going to do to soldiers. But what we're now seeing is these soldiers are coming back, and they're having issues. And those issues range from GI issues to breathing issues such as bronchitis, chronic bronchitis. They're having episodes of pneumonia more frequently. They're end up having, having sinusitis. You know, they're having severe sinus infections and, you know, things unexplained. And asthma, a common occurrence is these soldiers are coming back with adult asthma. You know, something that they've never had before and not a family history. So you're seeing some symptomatology coming back and it's being consistent. And it's, you know, being tied more and more to these burn pits. And I think that this is such a huge issue. One of the things that I have a particular soldier who came back and who's had this chronicity, well, when his lungs, he had pneumonia, and they x-rayed his lungs, they found spots on his lungs. When they looked deeper, they could identify that some of that was either a form of plastic or glass, you know. And
so they were burning some really nasty stuff in there, yeah. And it could be cause symptoms much like long-term smoking, or maybe way worse, and in a higher incidence than the normal population, so they're linked to the burn pits.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's something that I think is, you know, we're going to see more and more. And it's showing up, and it's not showing up like immediately. I think one thing I think people see is the asthma foremost, and then all of a sudden these infections in the lungs and the issues with that, with bronchitis and the pneumonias. I think it's a bigger issue. I know that recently, actually last Sunday, I met with a group of individuals and Amy Klobuchar to address that issue. She's actually promoting a bill right now. The bill is S.2679, and she introduced it to the Senate in March 15th of 2016, specifically to help veterans that are exposed to burn pits. And honestly, the bill summary is Helping Veterans Exposed to Burn Pits Act. So, you know, they're looking at funding this for $30 million to support the effort in doing research and being ahead of the game. You know, so often VA is, you know, they tend to be reactive instead of proactive. So hopefully this will help us be more proactive in dealing with the situation versus the Agent Orange issues that we've seen in Vietnam veterans to this day.
So, Lisa, we're just about out of time. If any veterans are out there that think they've been exposed to burn pits, they should contact their county veteran service officer, or if they're already a patient at the VA Medical Center, call their doctor and go in for a visit.
Definitely. And go see your county veteran service officer no matter what.
Lisa, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for your time. Have a great day.
That was Lisa Klenk, the Sibley County Veteran Service Officer and the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. We have one mention today, attention veterans and current service members. Please join Chaplain John Morris as he shares a dynamic message of faith lived in and out of the foxhole of everyday life at the Straight Talk Breakfast on Friday, May 20th, 2016 at the Prom Center in Oakdale. For registration information about this free event for veterans and currently serving service members, visit searchmn.org or call 952-929-0628. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Dr. Stephen Fu, Lieutenant Colonel Jim Swords, Lisa Klenk, Commissioner Larry Sheletow of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about many stories still untold, a new vision for Minnesota's historic Fort Snelling, and visit with Representative Bob Detmer about pending legislation. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.